If not, if you want to follow along with me, we're going to read from Hebrews chapter 3. We're going to begin reading in verse 12. But before we do that, as you turn there, I'd like you to take a very brief trip back with me to the Garden of Gethsemane, or the Garden of Eden, chapter 3 of Genesis, and we won't read from there, but what I want to bring you back to is put into your mind's eye and your thought process of the day before they fell. And how that, and that moment, on that day, that everything was perfect. It was truly paradise. Men are looking for paradise on earth today, and on that day it was here. It existed in reality, not only in thought. The weather was perfect, the trees were perfect, men, the man and the woman were perfect. They were enjoying one another's fellowship and the fellowship of God. Adam working in the garden and Eve being his helpmeet. And in a matter of one day, they're going to go from that reality where Adam is working in joy and with plenteousness, and there's food abounding, and there's purpose, and there's meaning in his work, and he's enjoying the work. He's going to go from that moment to the next day, working his fingers to the bone just so that he and Eve could survive. Eve's going to go from the perfect reality that she knew to hearing from God himself that one day she would bring forth children, and in even the birth process there would be pain. But there would also be pain in the raising of those children. And she knew there'd be pain because she knew that those children were going to be born into a world that was fallen. Can you imagine her thoughts as she knew firsthand what it was to be in a perfect relationship with God in the midst of a perfect creation that he had provided for them? And one day later, everything had changed. What was it? What was it that caused that? What was the first domino that fell that led to the fall of man? We might think it was some horrible thing. And if we were writing the story, if men were writing this account, and I believe it's another testament to the reality that this scripture is divinely inspired, because if men were writing this, it would no doubt be a lot more dramatic externally than what actually happened. What was the first domino that fell? If you asked me today, I would tell you that it was three words spoken by Satan. In the midst of that perfection, his voice rings out to Eve and says, "Hast God said." Three words. And you might say, what's so awful about those three words? How could that lead to the fall of man, to the reality in which we live? You and I, all of us know, without too much argument, that we live in a fallen world. We're fallen. We know we sin. We look out in the world and we see the evidences of sin. We see people with a distorted view of right and wrong taking the lives of innocent people on a daily basis now. And we see leaders and we see the powers that are in a place to make a difference doing nothing. How could three words lead to this reality that we live in? Hast God said? How is that first domino so important that it would lead to where we are right now, which is at risk, if you're lost, of an eternal destruction in hell, separated from God? And it all began with three words. Hast God said? What is it that he's doing? We know what he's doing. He is casting doubt upon God. All of creation knew what God had said. He was specific. He was articulate. He said it explicitly. You should not eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The day that you do, you will die. And along comes Satan, and he simply says three words, "Hast God said?" And he places into Eve's heart and her mind doubt, unbelief. Unbelief. The danger of unbelief is greater than any other danger that you face. Whether you are saved or lost, the danger of not believing God is perhaps the most dangerous threat that you face in your life. Hast God said? How many times has Satan whispered that in your ear? How many sins have you allowed in your life because you've listened to Satan exposing a doubt upon what God has said? All of creation, the whole world knew what God had said. Certainly Adam and Eve knew what God had said. And Satan plants doubt. Today, what I want to talk about is unbelief and the need to be on guard against it. The Hebrew writer is going to tell us that. He's going to encourage these people, many of whom, if not most of whom, were saved. I believe. Don't know that, but that is where my mind is on the audience in which that this writer is writing to. But doubt, and let's read together in verse number 12 of Hebrews chapter 3. He says, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. But exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the day of provocation. For some, when they had heard, did provoke. Howbeit not all that came out of Egypt by Moses, but with Moses, or with whom was he grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom sware he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief." We're going to focus on one singular verse in the beginning of our reading in verse 12. "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." That word, "take heed," it means a number of things, but in this context it is to see, to understand. And specifically, it is calling upon us to watch out for this. The Hebrew writer is telling us, and he's telling you, and he's telling me, and he's telling all those who have read it since the day that it's been written, to watch out for unbelief in our life. To be on guard against it. To be self-examining. And I believe that self-examination is a missing reality in the lives of far too many Christians today. It's a missing discipline in our thought process and in our teaching, I believe, in many cases, that we do not encourage one another enough. And the writer of Hebrews is encouraging us to watch out for unbelief in our life, to be on guard against it. And I would ask you, as God asked me, when was the last time that you spent focused time in meditation and prayer towards the end of examining your life and your heart? Where or is there any unbelief there? Any unbelief? Be on guard against it and watch out for it. One of the results, I believe, of the fall is that we are wired in some way as a result of the sin that is within us to always look outside of ourselves when there's a problem. We're geared to look externally. If we're not where we want to be, if we're not happy like we want to be, or satisfied like we want to be, or joyful like we want to be, we tend to look outside of ourselves for the reasons, and then we begin to blame others for our own unhappiness and our own lack of being close to God the way we'd like to be. We need to spend more time, I believe, looking inwardly and less time looking outwardly to find the peace with God and the fellowship with God that we want to have. If you're lost here today, I would encourage you to look within and to God. Do not look outside of you. Do not look at the external. Do not consider the external realities in which you find yourself. Look and examine your heart before God as if it were just you and Him, because in reality it is. It is just you and Him. But we look and we are very good at examining others, but we've lost a little bit, I'm afraid, or we at least tend to avoid examining our own heart. And the Hebrew writer is telling us to take heed. Be on guard for this. Look within yourself and examine whether there is something there that is unbelief toward God. The self-examination is a universal need. Scripture told us in the 12th verse, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief. No one is exempt from this. This is universal for the individual. I can say with certainty that everyone needs to perform this self-examination. None of us, no matter how long we've been trying to serve the Lord, no matter how long we've been trying to study His Word, no matter how long we've been in church, no matter how many prayer meetings we've been to, no matter how many revivals we've been to, it does not preclude you or me from doing and exercising this self-examination. Is there any unbelief in my life? And we're going to talk in a moment about some of those things that can exemplify unbelief, because I'm afraid far too much of the time we only define unbelief by whether you're saved or whether you're lost. Certainly that is a division of belief, but I would tell you that the lost have never believed. There is not an ounce of belief. You might say, how can you say that? I'm going to explain it in a minute, but I believe that for those of us that are saved, there are times in our life that we simply do not believe God. And that first domino that fell in the Garden of Eden that led to their destruction and our inheritance of sin, I'm telling you today, the longer you allow unbelief in your life, no matter how insignificant you may think it is, it's going to lead to the destruction of something or someone in your life. It may be you, it may be others, mostly it'll probably be both. Where is the unbelief in my life? Where am I? Am I examining myself? Am I taking time in my day to examine my own heart? Because this is a universal need. It's universal for the individual. There's no one that can be precluded from this. And you know what else? It's universal for the church. For the church to experience and to meet that that she is capable of, for her to realize her biblical potential. As many as possible need to be conducting this self-examination in my own heart. Where is the unbelief? Because I would go so far today and be so bold as to tell you this. I believe there's probably unbelief in all of our lives right now. Unbelief. I was saved when I was 11 years old, and God has secured that and He has sealed that. And we're going to talk more about that in a minute. But this examination in my heart about do I believe God fully for my life is very much up in the air. And it is in yours as well. But the church, for it to reach its potential, as many as possible among us need to be examining our own lives. God, in His mercy, does not wait to bless a church until everybody is spiritually in tune. By the way, that's a trick of Satan that he's played against the church for years. Somebody will come up to the front, or somebody will be saved. Maybe 10 will be saved. Maybe 4, maybe 20 will be saved. And you know what people, what Satan will do? Well, you guys must be doing something right. Boy, your church must be really close to the Lord. Doesn't mean that at all. I'm sorry, it just doesn't mean that at all. It means God is merciful. God does not wait for us all to be 100% spiritually in tune. If He did, He would never bless any of us. They just never would. So there is always this reality of unbelief. There's always this reality that we're not fully where we need to be. But the more we search Him, the more we seek Him, the more we pattern our lives and orchestrate and plan our lives around God and belief in what He has said, I believe the greater potential for the church to fulfill her calling, which was to save people. I hope you caught that. It's a mistake. I said it purposely. It's not to save people. It's to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the world and to teach those that have come and been saved to obey God and what? In everything that He said. Believe everything that He said. Go in and understand that this self-examination is universal. If you are saved, if you are lost, you need to examine your own heart and be on guard for any unbelief that may be set up in your heart right now. And I would ask you, if God is revealing something to you in your heart right now, that this is an area where you do not believe me, I would ask you to give it to Him, take it out, set it at the altar that He would come to, that you would, He would allow you to come to and say, God, take it from my life. I want to believe you more. Once you've been saved, you are on the beginning of a journey of believing God. I love the way the Africans put this. And they will always say that when we're asking, I'll ask Samuel or Paul, we've been there and we've said, you know, what do you want to happen? Or what are the struggles that you have? And he talks about the things that they're looking for. And Samuel will usually say it this way. We are believing God to bring it to pass. Now, it's a great way to say it. We are actively believing God. He is going to do what He wants to do. We're believing God to see to it. How much are we believing God today? Is it a verb in our life? I'm believing God. As we look at Covenant Missionary Baptist Church, what are we believing God for? What are we believing in Him to see to? As all too often with my own mind and heart, I see all kinds of struggles or pain ahead of us, and what are we believing God to provide? In fact, I tell you that the opportunities of struggle and difficulty are the exact opportunities we have to believe God. I was talking with my boss this last week, and we talked about how that in good times, how many of you have grown spiritually in good times, easy times, prosperous times? Maybe we've grown some, but how many of you have grown in struggle? How many of you have grown in those times when you didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring? But it was worth it, wasn't it? Would you trade the struggle for the prosperity? When you realize that prosperity often robs you of that fellowship with God, it's just true. It's just true. Paradox, perhaps, of the Christian life, but it's true that struggle brings joy because we remember clearly, because it's in front of us at the moment, that this life is temporary. We believe in God. The intent of this self-examination, again, is to identify unbelief. As you examine your life, as you examine your heart, we must be looking for and on guard for and watching out for unbelief. We must know the disease and what it looks like and then look for it. This is why Bible study is such an important reality to the Christian. You must know the way God thinks about the world and about you and about others. You must know what God sees. Because that is then where you begin to see where your belief is out of kilter. It's not in the same place as what God has said to be true. God warns in Scripture of many different sins, of many different things that we are to avoid, but unbelief is principal among them. Isn't unbelief the unpardonable sin? Do you begin now to see the damage that resulted from those three words of Satan? Hath God said, casting doubt is as damaging and as destructive as any of these other sins, if not more so. We are to look for unbelief. Unbelief, though, seems to get, when you list sins, if somebody were to be honest with themselves, Even in most Christian realities today, if you were to go around and say, list the worst sins, how long do you think it would take for them to list unbelief? I think it'd be on down the list. I think we'd start with murder, we'd start with lying, we'd start with adultery, we'd start with all of these other things. I don't know that God looks at it that way. In fact, I would tell you that unbelief leads to all those others. Because we just don't believe what God said about them. We don't believe the damage that He says will result if we participate in that sin. We don't believe Him. You say, well, yes, I believe Him. No, you don't. In your life, as you live it, you are not believing God. Listen, we can satisfy the call of religion by refraining from certain sins, but we can only satisfy the call of God by believing Him. That's the difference. Religion has nothing for you. Believing God has everything for you. That is where the reality of knowing God comes in. Listen, your life, your entire life, every facet of it, your work, your home, your spouse, your children, your leisure, all of it boils down to this. Do you believe God in your life? Do you believe Him? Really believe Him? As I considered this, and the thought that God gave to me, and this picture that He gave was this, and I'm not saying it was a physical picture that I saw, but this concept He gave was a three-step ladder of unbelief that must be guarded against and overcome in our life. There's three steps to this. The first one is unbelief of God. I'll talk about that in a minute. Then there's unbelief in God. And there's unbelief to God. And it is a progression. It begins where men at first, they just don't believe God exists. They don't believe He's real. They don't believe that He has revealed Himself, even though He has revealed Himself so majestically in creation and has revealed Himself inwardly to you. I want to tell you very quickly about a man named Voltaire. Some of you know him. You've read about him. He's a noted 18th century philosopher. He said that it took centuries to build up Christianity, but he said this, and he was an atheist. He was an unbeliever, never even made it past the first rung of belief. Very proud in his atheism. He says, I'll show you how just one Frenchman can destroy Christianity within 50 years. And taking his pen, he dipped it into the ink of unbelief and wrote against God. And 20 years after his death, the Geneva Bible Society purchased his house for printing the Bible. And on go the realities. It's interesting. It says the Bible is the bestseller in all the world, and his entire 6-volume work was sold at one point for 90 cents. And he, just before his death, he is noted and has claimed to have been said, I wish I had never been born. That's what unbelief of God will get you. Empty, hopeless, meaningless. I wish I had never been born. Never made it past the first round. Psalmist calls these people, does not mince words. In Psalm 14:1 and also in Psalm 59, I believe, it says, the fool hath said in his heart, there is no God. Unbelief of God. Never take that first step, you'll end up in hell for all of eternity. Because the reality is that God has revealed Himself. He is real. We do know Him. The second step, unbelief in God. This is the individual who believes that there is a God, but rejects Christ. He doesn't believe Him fully. He believes He exists, he just doesn't believe what He says. That second step. The second step involves being confronted with the truth and yet rejecting it. You don't doubt, you don't deny that God exists. In fact, often in the way this manifests itself, this particular type of unbelief, The second rung of this ladder that you must overcome is that it often manifests itself not in outright denial of God, but in outright denial of what He has said and delay in obedience. Just delay. Delay and put it off and procrastinate. You believe in God, but you do not believe what He has said, because what He has said is you have an urgent and immediate need. None of us hold tomorrow. You believe yourself free to wait for a more convenient season, and in so doing, you demonstrate an unbelief in and a rejection of God. You are as King Agrippa when he told Paul in the 17th chapter of Acts, "Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." You don't really believe him. I believe four of the most haunting words in all of eternity and hell will be, "I was almost persuaded, but I didn't believe him. I didn't believe him. I thought I had time. I thought I'd have many opportunities." There's a story that is told I want to share with you. Forgive me for reading it, but it was too long to try to memorize. There's a story is told of a man who had a dream. He said to his friends, "Brethren, I had a strange dream last night. I saw a council of devils held in hell. And they were met in order to take counsel how to defeat the work of God on earth. One of Satan's servants said to him, 'Master, I saw a cargo of missionaries going to a foreign land to preach the gospel. I raised a storm and sank the vessel.' Satan said, 'Thou hast done nothing to stay the hand of God.' Then another servant of Satan stood forth and said, 'Master, I've caused books to be written against God and against all that is good and holy and pure.' And to this Satan said, 'That's better than what the other guy did, but they won't believe you. I have been trying to persuade them that there is no God or heaven or hell for 6,000 years, and they believe it almost as much today as ever. You've done nothing to prevent the work of God.' So Satan said to another, 'What hast thou done?' And he said, 'Master, let me tell you what I've done. There was a mission going on in a certain city, and I attended every service of the mission, and I said to the vast congregation, every word that stranger says is eternally true. God loves you. Jesus died for you. The Holy Spirit pleads with you. You can get perfect peace in your soul.' But at the close of the service, as the congregation is going out, I whisper in their ears, 'Put it off until tomorrow. Don't come to any decision. Put it off until tomorrow.' To this Satan smiled and said, 'Thou hast done more than all the rest to defeat the counsel and purpose of God in salvation.'" You see, when God speaks, you don't have any choice but to hear. You've heard it. When I was 11 years old and God convicted me of my sin, I could never go back behind that line again. I could reject Him, or I could believe Him. I could reject Him, or I could come to Him in repentance and faith and belief and be saved. Some people make it up that first step on the ladder and they believe there is a God, but they never make it to that second step. Third step is unbelief to God. It is the disobedient child of God, I think, in this way of looking at things. Having overcome unbelief of God, you find yourself on the first step. Then you find yourself on the second step, having believed in Him, and you're saved, and yet you find there is yet more to do. More to be done. More belief to be experienced and to enjoy. The good news is that once you've reached that second rung of the ladder, you will never again go down any further, because you have been changed, you have been redeemed, you are a child of God who has been regenerated. You cannot deny the existence of God any more than you can deny your own existence. You cannot deny what He has done for you any more than you can deny that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, because you know what He has done for you.
You remember that day, and you remember the many sins that day, that He has demonstrated His mercy and His grace in your life, and you're on that second rung, never again to take a step backward. But there is yet a third step of belief. And this is in part what the Hebrew writer, I believe, was trying to encourage those who had been saved, is to be on guard for unbelief in your life. This again, belief to God, it manifests itself in your obedience to Him. You only ascend this final step when your life and when your choices involve being obedient and believing God. Truly believing what He said, what He has said, and what He says to you today. Now, if you're like me, and you're like most, probably, you spend a lot of time going up to that third rung and then coming back down. And then going back up and then coming back down. You believe God, and you enjoy the peace and the fellowship with Him that that brings. You believe Him in whatever that it is in your life that He's asking you to do, and you're on that third rung, and there is joy, and there's peace, but after time, for any number of reasons, you find yourself having taken a step back down, and you look up wishing you'd be back there, wishing you'd be again in the fellowship of God the way you once were, because you desire to serve Him, and you desire to love Him, and now you're fighting two different areas of the battle. You're looking externally, trying to find out what's wrong outside, instead of looking inside and trying to find the unbelief in my own heart. It doesn't matter what's going on outwardly. I can be in the midst of peace with God no matter the case. How many times have we thought about Peter and the others in prison and being beaten and Paul being left for dead outside of Iconium, time and again beaten over and over, and yet he said it was a joy because he believed God. And you're on that second rung, and you're never going to go any lower because you've been saved, you've been sealed by the Spirit of God. You want to be on that third rung, but there's some sacrifice you have to make, and you're not willing to make it. What is it? Name it in your life. Understand it. Examine your heart. What is it in my life that's keeping me from being truly obedient and truly believing God? What am I holding back from God? What is it I'm holding back from God? What am I not believing? You know, another danger is there's some truth to the fact that you may think you're on the third step when in reality you're not. Because you're not doing any self-examination. You're not searching your heart. You're not asking God to search it. You think you're on the second step and in reality you're on the Or you're on the third step, in reality you're not. You look down and you find yourself where you are, and you look back up. And you wonder what it was that you grabbed onto that you need to let go of in order to take that third step again. This reality of unbelief that we are to be on guard against, note very particularly that the writer said, in your heart, is where this unbelief will be found. In your heart. That's where you must look. Not outwardly. You see, the reality is most unbelief almost always sets up in your heart long before it sets up in your life. Long before any outward manifestations of unbelief might show themselves outwardly, You've had unbelief in your heart before that. Just don't believe Him. Maybe He's calling you to some certain service, and you know it. And you know you're being disobedient. Which in reality comes down to just not believing Him. And you know this in your heart, but outwardly everything is going on the way it always did. I can see that we've come to church today. That's good. That's good. I can see that outwardly the demonstration of obedience and belief is here. I believe it's good that we've come together and we're all in the same room. But if our hearts determined our location today, would we all indeed be in the same room? if I could turn on a spiritual GPS unit, where would it reveal your location to be? God? For some worldly pursuit? Worldly leisure? For some fear? For some regret? Or some fill in the blank, whatever that it might be. It is in the heart that we must look, because it is the heart that leads the rest. I'm so taken by the simplicity of Satan's technique to convince people that the mere outward exercise of religion somehow impacts the heart. How many people are in church pews today outwardly showing the signs of belief, but inwardly there's been unbelief there for months and years? The truth that you and I must wrestle with is God knows your heart. He does have a spiritual GPS. He knows exactly. He knows exactly where your heart is, and we need to wrestle with that. This unbelief sets up in our heart. What is then the condition of your heart? Where is it? With regard to your belief in God, where is your heart? You notice as well in this 12th verse, which there's so many things that could be said about it, but the relationship between unbelief and what you're really looking for is the danger of departing from God. Departing from God. That's what he said was the greatest concern. Falling away from God begins with unbelief. An unchecked unbelief in your life and in your heart will always lead to falling away. You cannot have unbelief in your heart without it impacting your relationship with God. You just can't. Now, you can be educated and God can reveal more of His will to you and you can have a close walk with Him, but the moment that He brings something to your attention, you cannot experience unbelief and not have it affect negatively your relationship with Him. Because He knows. He knows. There have been times in my life I've had to do things and I have felt very concerned about having to do them. And ultimately it came down to when I did obey, and I certainly cannot claim that I always have, but when I did, it was I'm not willing to pay the price. And what was the price? Falling away from God. This is the concern, that we would depart from the living God. It isn't about losing worldly blessings or that something bad will happen to us. I don't want to throw stones unnecessarily today, but have we ever heard testimonies where somebody would stand up and say, I have to do this, or God is not going to do this for me? I have to do this service or God is going to punish my family. I have to do this or this bad thing is going to happen. I'm not going to deny perhaps some reality to that, but do you hear what the Hebrew writer is saying? What is the danger? The danger has nothing to do with us losing some worldly comfort. It has nothing to do with God doing something for us. It has everything to do with this. The relationship with God will be hurt. That's the danger. That's the concern. The internal conversation of the merely religious man goes something like this. I don't want to do something wrong because I'll be punished for it. The internal conversation of the person who is believing God and is examining their heart and is in the right frame of mind and heart is, I don't want to be unbelieving because it will separate me from God. Those are two entirely different views of Christianity, two entirely different views of the way and the motivations for service to God. One, when you really boil it down, comes down to service to self, and the other is truly service to God. I don't want to be unbelieving, not because of what it will get me in this life, but because of the fact that it will separate me from God. That's what I am on guard against. When you look at this verse, when it says to be on guard, to take heed, That itself is a verb, and it is in the present tense and the active voice. And while we said a moment ago that everyone is subject to this need, we also realize that it is a never-ending need. It is ongoing reality. I cannot say that on August 27th in 1988, I finally got on the third rung, and I finally believed God, and I'm done struggling with that. This is an ever-present reality. Take heed. Do this continually. We don't ever get done with the task of taking heed and guarding our lives against unbelief. So long as we are in this flesh, we must continually be watchful against unbelief in our lives. This is why we need to set up our days with time to be introspective and self-examining. You never get to a point where this is not a reality. Make no mistake, brethren, this is a war that we're engaged in. This is a war over your eternal soul and the eternal souls of others that God would have us reach out to. This is warfare. The Christian life is warfare. The Christian heart that believes God is ever engaged in warfare. He's constantly struggling, Satan is, to plant seeds of doubt in your life. Constantly. Especially in this society in which we live. And Ephesians tells us, above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. Where is your shield of faith on a daily basis? How many days, how many mornings have we gotten out of bed and walked out the door and realized we've left our shield at home? We never picked it up. We never looked at it. We never thought about it. You know what I would encourage you and I to do is to put that shield of faith right in front of the door before we leave somehow. Make the first thing somehow some reality of an introspective view of the reality that I need to have this shield of faith because there are going to be fiery darts of the wicked one coming my way. And I need to be prepared to deal with them because they will be coming my way. Belief in God and guarding against it, holding the shield of faith. I would ask you today, very as I come towards the end here this morning, which step of the ladder are you on? Which one? Self-examination involves asking ourselves questions and giving ourselves honest answers. Do you believe God? Believe in God? Do you believe to Him? Obedience? What are you not believing God about in your life? What has He said that you just don't believe? What have you not let go of that He has called you to let go of? Do not listen to the lies of the enemy as he encourages you to delay. If our eyes were opened to the warfare that is going on around us right now, we would all fall to our knees and beg God for help. If we could see somehow the darts of the wicked one as it pierces the hearts of those we love, as he thrusts that dart of unbelief into their minds and into their hearts, we would fall upon our knees and beg God to intervene. Because as much as we would love to be able to protect them with our shield of faith, everyone has to have their own. If we could see it, if we saw those darts as the wicked one and his servants throw them into the hearts of those we love, if we could look out into the world as we lived our life and saw the vast army of Satan's followers as they throw their darts of unbelief at shocking speed and with deadly accuracy, TV and radio and Facebook and the internet and all of these things that'll just make me sound like an old fuddy-duddy, And Satan wants people to sound like that so that he can continue to throw his darts of unbelief. And he is throwing them. And you ever see those movies where they have the old days when they were fighting with swords and bows and arrows? And the first volley of those arrows, it's always a big dramatic scene in the movie, either in the opening or the final battle. All these hundreds of arrows thrown into the sky. And as they say, the arrows will darken the sun. I'm telling you today, the darts of Satan are darkening the light of the gospel, because we don't have our shields of faith in place to quench them. And we're opening the doors to unbelief into our life every day and into the life of our children. The world needs to see people who are quenching the darts of unbelief with their faith. Otherwise, we're defenseless. Above all, taking the shield of faith, wherewith you shall be able to quench all the fiery darts.
In Mark 9, it says, "One of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit." It's the devil. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth, and gnasheth with his teeth, and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples that they should cast him out, and they could not. He answered and said, "O faithless generation," this is Jesus, "how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me." And they brought him unto him, and when he saw him, straightway the spirit tore him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed foaming. And he asked his father, "How long is it ago since this came unto him?" And he said, "Of a child. And oft times they have cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us." You hear the desperation in the tone of this father as he comes to Jesus, begging him to help. Jesus said unto him, "If thou can believe, all things possible to him that believes." You ever consider what this man said next? These words come into my mind and my heart frequently. "Straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. Help thou mine unbelief." I believe, but I want to believe more. I believe. Brethren, I believe God. I want to believe him more. I believe he can change our lives. I believe he can change our homes. I believe he can change our churches. But I want to believe him more. Belief precedes the action. Belief precedes salvation. It's an instant, but it must be there. What are we not believing God about? What sin are we entertaining in our life because we don't believe that when God says to us, "This will hurt you"? What command has he given to us? What has he called you to do? What has he called us to do that we believe, but we need to believe more? Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you or me an evil heart of unbelief. Lord, we believe. I want you to just follow the Lord. Obey.
Same page, 343.